calculate ways to pry information from Archer's clients. One wall had been explored. One wall that revealed nothing. She could do the back wall tomorrow, but she was here already. Selena picked up the torch. Dorian jerked awake at the sound of a clock chiming, and found himself sweating despite the fierce cold in his bedroom. It was odd enough that he'd fallen asleep, but the frigid temperature was what struck him as most unusual. His windows were all sealed, his door shut, and yet his shallow breaths clouded in front of him. He sat up, his head aching. A nightmare of teeth and shadows and glinting daggers, just a nightmare. Dorian shook his head, the temperature in the room already increasing. Perhaps it had only been a rogue draft. The nap was just the product of staying up too late last night. The nightmare probably triggered by hearing from Kaol about Selena's encounter. He gritted his teeth. Her job wasn't without risk, and though he was furious about what had happened, he had a feeling she'd only push him away further if he yelled at her about it. Dorian shook off the last bit of the cold and walked to his dressing room to change his wrinkled tunic. As he turned, he could have sworn he caught a glimpse of a faint ring of frost around where his body had lain on the couch. But when he looked back to see it more fully, there was nothing there. Selena heard a distant clock chime somewhere, and didn't quite believe it when she heard the time. She'd been here for 3 hours. 3 hours? The back wall wasn't like the side wall. It dipped and curved and had closets and alcoves and little study rooms full of mice and dust. And just when she'd been about to draw an X on the wall and call it a day, she noticed the tapestry. She saw it only because it was the sole bit of decoration she'd encountered along the wall. Considering how the last 6 months of her life had gone, part of her just knew that it had to mean something. There was no depiction of Elena, or a stag, or anything lovely and green. No. This tapestry, woven from red threads so dark it looked black, depicted nothing. She touched the ancient strands, marveling at the hue, so deep that it seemed to swallow her fingers in its darkness. The hair on the back of her neck rose, and Selena put a hand on her dagger as she pulled the tapestry aside. She swore, and swore again. Another secret door greeted her. Glancing around the stacks, listening for any footsteps or rustle of clothing, Selena pushed it open. A breeze, musty and thick, floated past her from the depths of the spiral stairwell revealed by the open door. The light of her torch reached only a few feet inside, illuminating ornately carved walls depicting a battle. There was a thin groove in the marble wall, a channel barely 3 inches deep. It curved along the entire length of the wall, extending beyond the limits of her sight. She swiped her finger in the groove. It was smooth as glass, and held a faint residue of something slimy. A small silver lamp hung from the wall, and she put her torch in its place as she took down the lamp, liquid splashing inside. "Clever," she murmured. Smiling to herself, making sure her torch was far enough away, Selena placed the slender nozzle of the lamp into the groove and tipped. Oil poured out and traveled down the chute. Selena grabbed her torch and touched it to the wall. Instantly, the groove glowed with fire, providing a thin line of light all the way down the dark and cobwebbed stairwell. A hand on her hip, she stared down, admiring the engraved surface of the walls. She doubted anyone would come looking for her, but she still put the tapestry back into its original position and took out one of her long daggers. As she descended, the images of battle shifted and moved in the firelight, and she could have sworn that the stone faces turned to watch her go. She stopped looking at the walls. A breath of cold air brushed her face, and she at last spied the bottom of the stair. It was a dark corridor that smelled of aged and rotting things. A torch lay discarded at the bottom of the step, covered with enough cobwebs to reveal that no one had been down here in a long, long time. Unless that thing can see in the dark. She shoved away that thought, too, and picked up the torch, igniting it on the illuminated wall of the stairwell. Cobwebs hung from the arched ceiling, grazing over the cobblestone floor. Rickety bookcases lined the hallway, the shelves crammed full of books so worn that Selena couldn't read the titles. Scrolls and pieces of parchment were stuffed into every nook and cranny, or lay unrolled on the sagging wood, as if someone had just walked away from reading them. Somehow, it was more of a tomb than Elena's resting place. She walked down the corridor, stopping occasionally to examine the scrolls. They were maps and receipts from kings long since turned to dust. Castle records? All this walking and fretting, and all you've discovered is useless castle records. That's probably what the creature was after, an ancient king's grocery bill. Beginning a chant of truly despicable curses, Selena waved her torch before her and walked on until a hallway appeared on the left. It had to lead even lower than Elena's tomb, but how deep? There was a lantern and a groove in the wall, so Selena once again lit the spiraling passage. This time, the gray stone depicted a forest and Faye. It was impossible to miss those delicately pointed ears and elongated canines. The Fae lounged and danced and played music, content to bask in their immortality and ethereal beauty. No, the king and his cronies couldn't know about this place, because they certainly would have defaced these carvings by now. Selena didn't need a historian to know that this stairwell was old. Far older than the one through which she had just descended, perhaps even older than the castle itself. Why had Gavin picked this site to build his castle? Had there been something here before? Or something beneath it worth hiding? A cold sweat slithered down her spine as she peered into the stairwell. Against all odds, another breeze wafted up from below. Iron. It smelled like iron. The images on the walls flickered as she descended the spiral staircase. When she at last reached the bottom, she took a shallow breath and ignited a torch from a nearby bracket. She was in a long hallway paved in gray stones. There was only one door in the center of the left-hand wall, and no exit save for the stairs behind her. She scanned the hall. Nothing. Not even a mouse. After observing for another moment, she stepped down it, igniting the few torches on the wall as she went. The iron door was unremarkable, though undeniably impenetrable. Its studded surface was like a slab of starless sky. Selena stretched out a hand, but stopped before her fingers could graze the metal. Why was it made entirely of iron? Iron was the one element immune to magic. She remembered that much. There had been so many kinds of magic wielders 10 years ago, people whose power was believed by some to have long ago originated from the gods themselves, despite the King of Otterland's claim that magic was an affront to the divine. Wherever it came from, magic had countless variations, abilities to heal, to shapeshift, to summon flame or water or storm, to encourage the growth of crops and plants, to glimpse the future, and on and on. Most of those gifts had been watered down over the millennia. But for some rare strong ones, when they held on to their power too long, the iron in their blood caused fainting spells. Or worse. She had seen hundreds of doors in the castle. Doors of wood, of bronze, of glass. But never one of solid iron. This one was ancient, from a time when an iron door meant something. So was this supposed to keep someone out? Or to keep something in. Selena touched the eye of Elena, scanning the door again. It yielded no answers about what might be behind it, so she clamped a hand around the handle and pulled. It was locked. There was no keyhole in sight. She ran a hand along the grooves. Perhaps it had rusted shut? She frowned. No sign of rust either. Selena stepped back, studying the door. Why put a handle on it if there was no way of opening it? And why use a lock unless there was something worthwhile hidden behind it? She turned away, but the amulet warmed against her skin, and a flicker of light shone through her tunic. Selena paused. It could have been the flicker of the torch, but Selena studied the slender gap between the door and the stone. A shadow, darker than the blackness beyond, lingered on the other side. Slowly, drawing out her thinnest and flattest dagger with her free hand, she set the torch down and lay on her stomach, as close to the door as she dared. Just shadows. It was just shadows. Or rats. Either way, she had to know. With absolute silence, she slid the shining dagger under the door. The reflection along the blade revealed nothing but darkness. Darkness and torchlight. She shifted the dagger, pushing it just a bit farther beneath. Two gleaming green-gold orbs flashed in the shadows beyond. She lunged back, swiping the dagger with her, biting down on her lip to keep from cursing aloud. Eyes. Eyes gleaming in the dark. Eyes like an... She sighed through her nose, relaxing slightly. Eyes like an animal, like a rat or a mouse, or some feral cat. Still, she crept forward again, holding her breath as she angled the blade under the door to scan the darkness. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. She watched the dagger's blade for a full minute, waiting for those eyes to reappear. But whatever it was had scuttled off. A rat. It was probably a rat. Still, Selena couldn't shake the chill that had wrapped around her, or ignore the warmth of the amulet at her neck. Even if there wasn't a creature behind that door, answers lay behind it, and she'd find them. Just not today. Not until she was ready. Because there might be ways to get through that door, and considering how old this place was, she had a feeling that the power that had sealed it was connected to the word marks. But if there was something behind the door... She shifted the fingers of her right hand as she picked up her torch, studying the arc of scars left by the Ritterak's bite. It was just a rat. And she had no interest, none, in being proven wrong right now. Chapter 15. The Great Hall was packed at dinner that night. Though Selena usually preferred to eat in her rooms, when she heard that Rena Goldsmith would be performing during the meal to honor Prince Holland's return, she crammed herself into one of the long tables in the back. It was the only place where the lesser nobility, some of Kaol's higher-born men, and any others who wanted to brave the viper's nest of the court were allowed to sit. The royal family dined at their table atop the dais, in the front of the hall, with Parrington Roland and a woman who looked like she might be Roland's mother. From the other side of the room, Selena could hardly see little Prince Holland, but he seemed to be pale, rotund, and blessed with a head full of ebony curls. It seemed rather unfair to put Holland next to Dorian, where comparisons could easily be made. And though she'd heard every nasty rumor about Holland, she couldn't help but feel a shred of pity for the boy. Kaol, to her surprise, opted to sit beside her, five of his men joining them at the table. Though there were several guards posted around the room, she had no doubt that the ones at her table were just as alert and watchful as those stationed by the doors and dais. Her tablemates were all polite to her. Wary, but polite. They didn't mention what had happened last night, but they did quietly ask how she was feeling. Ress, who had guarded her during the competition, seemed genuinely relieved that she was better, and was the chattiest of them all, gossiping as much as any old court hen. "And then," Ress was saying, his boyish face set with a fiendish delight, "just as he got into her bed, stark naked as the day he was born, her father walked in." Winces and groans came from the guards, even Kaol himself, and he dragged him out of bed by his feet, took him down the hall, and dumped him down the stairs. He was shrieking like a pig the whole time. Kaol leaned back in his seat, crossing his arms. "You would be too if someone were dragging your naked carcass across the ice-cold floor." He smirked as Rest tried to deny it. Kaol seemed so comfortable with the men, his body relaxed, eyes alight. And they respected him too, always glancing at him for approval, for confirmation, for support. As Selena's chuckle faded, Kaol looked at her, his brows high. You're one to laugh. You moan about the cold floors more than anyone I know. She straightened as the guards gave hesitant smiles.
If I recall correctly, you complain about them every time I wipe the floor with you when we spar.
Oh-ho! Ress cried, and Kael's brows rose higher. Selena gave him a grin. Dangerous words, Kael said.
Do we need to go to the training hall to see if you can back them up?
Well, as long as your men don't object to seeing you knocked on your ass.
We certainly do not object to that, Ress crowed.
Kael shot him a look, more amused than warning. Ress quickly added,
Captain.
Kael opened his mouth to reply, but then a tall, slim woman walked onto the small stage erected along one side of the room. Selena craned her neck as Rena Goldsmith floated across the wooden platform to where a massive harp and a man with a violin waited. She'd seen Rena perform only once before, years ago, at the Royal Theater, on a cold winter night like this. For 2 hours, the theater was so still that it seemed as if everyone had stopped breathing. Rena's voice had floated through Selena's head for days afterward. From their table, Selena could hardly see Rena, just enough to tell that she wore a long green dress. No petticoats, no corset, no ornamentation save for the woven leather belt circling her narrow hips, and that her red-gold hair was unbound. Silence rippled through the hall, and Rena curtsied to the dais. When she took her seat before the green and gold harp, the spectators were waiting. But how long would the court's interest hold? Rena nodded to the reedy violinist, and her long white fingers began plucking out a melody on the harp. After a few notes, the rhythm established itself, followed by the slow, sad sweep of the violin. They wove together, blending, lifting up, 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 until Rena opened her mouth. And when she sang, the whole world faded. Her voice was soft, ethereal, the sound of a lullaby half-remembered. The songs she sang, one by one, held Selena in place. Songs of distant lands, of forgotten legends, of lovers forever waiting to be reunited. Not a single soul stirred in the hall. Even the servants remained along the walls and in doorways and alcoves. Rena paused between songs only long enough to allow a heartbeat of applause before the harp and the violin began anew, and she hypnotized them all once more. And then Rena looked toward the dais. "This song," she said softly, "is in honor of the esteemed royal family who invited me here tonight." The song was an ancient legend, an old poem, actually. One Selena hadn't heard since childhood, and never set to music. She heard it now as if for the first time. The story of a fey woman blessed with a horrible, profound power that was sought by kings and lords in every kingdom. While they used her to win wars and conquer nations, they all feared her and kept their distance. It was a bold song to sing. Dedicating it to the king's family was even bolder. But the royals made no outcry. Even the king just stared blankly at Rena, as though she weren't singing about the very power he'd outlawed 10 years ago. Perhaps her voice could conquer even a tyrant's heart. Perhaps there was an unstoppable magic inherent in music and art. Rena went on, spinning the ageless story of the years that the Fey woman served those kings and lords, and the loneliness that consumed her bit by bit. And then one day, a knight came, seeking her power on behalf of his king. As they traveled to his kingdom, his fear turned to love, and he saw her not for the power she wielded, but for the woman beneath. Of all the kings and emperors who had come courting her with promises of wealth beyond imagining, it was the knight's gift, of seeing her for who she was, not what she was, that won her heart. Selena didn't know when she began crying. Somehow she skipped a breath, and it set her lips wobbling. She shouldn't cry, not here, not with these people around her. But then a warm, calloused hand grasped hers beneath the table, and she turned her head to find Kael looking at her. He smiled slightly, and she knew he understood. So Selena looked at her captain of the guard,
and smiled back.
Holland was squirming beside him, hissing and grousing about how bored he was and what a stupid performance this was. But Dorian's attention was on the long table in the back of the hall. Rena Goldsmith's unearthly music wove through the cavernous space, wrapping them in a spell that he would have called magic had he not known better. But Selena and Kaol just sat there, staring at each other. And not just staring, but something more than that. Dorian stopped hearing the music. She had never looked at him like that, not once, not even for a heartbeat. Rena was finishing her song, and Dorian tore his eyes away from them. He didn't think anything had happened between them, not yet. Kaol was stubborn and loyal enough to never make his move, or to even realize that he looked at Selena the same way she looked at him. Holland's complaining grew louder, and Dorian took a long, long breath. He would move on, because he would not be like the ancient kings in the song and keep her for himself. She deserved a loyal, brave knight who saw her for what she was and did not fear her. And he deserved someone who would look at him like that, even if the love wouldn't be the same, even if the girl wouldn't be her. So Dorian closed his eyes and took another long breath. And when he opened his eyes, he let her go. Hours later, the King of Otterland stood at the back of the dungeon chamber as his secret guards dragged Rena Goldsmith forward. The butcher's block at the center of the room was already soaked with blood. Her companion's headless corpse lay a few feet away, his blood trickling toward the drain in the floor. Parrington and Roland stood silent beside the king, watching, waiting. The guards shoved the singer to her knees before the stained stone. One of them grabbed a fistful of her red-gold hair and yanked, forcing her to look at the king as he stepped forward. "It is punishable by death to speak of or to encourage magic. It is an affront to the gods, and an affront to me that you sang such a song in my hall." Rena Goldsmith just stared at him, her eyes bright. She hadn't struggled when his men grabbed her after the performance, or even screamed when they'd beheaded her companion, as if she'd been expecting this. "Any last words?" A queer, calm rage settled over her lined face, and she lifted her chin. "I have worked for 10 years to become famous enough to gain an invitation to this castle. 10 years so I could come here to sing the songs of magic that you tried to wipe out. So I could sing those songs, and you would know that we are still here. That you may outlaw magic, that you may slaughter thousands, but we who keep the old ways still remember." Behind him, Roland snorted. "Enough," the king said, and snapped his fingers. The guards shoved her head down on the block. "My daughter was 16, she went on. Tears ran over the bridge of her nose and onto the block, but her voice remained strong and loud. 16 when you burned her. Her name was Kayleen, and she had eyes like thunderclouds. I still hear her voice in my dreams." The king jerked his chin to the executioner, who stepped forward. "My sister was 36. Her name was Liesa, and she had 2 boys who were her joy." The executioner raised his axe. "My neighbor and his wife were 70. Their names were John and Estrel. They were killed because they dared try to protect my daughter when your men came for her." Rena Goldsmith was still reciting her list of the dead when the axe fell.
Chapter 16. Selena dipped her spoon into her porridge, tasted it, then dumped in a mountain of sugar. "I much prefer eating breakfast together than going out in the freezing cold." Fleetfoot, her head on Selena's lap, huffed loudly. "I think she does, too," she added with a grin. Nehemia laughed softly before taking a bite of her bread. "It seems like this is the only time of day either of us get to see you," she said in Eelway. "I've been busy." "Busy hunting down the conspirators on the king's list?" A pointed glance in her direction, another bite of toast. "What do you want me to say?" Selena stirred the sugar into her porridge, focusing on that instead of the look on her friend's face.
I want you to look me in the eye and tell me that you think your freedom is worth this price.
Is this why you've been so on edge lately?
Nehemia set down her toast.
How can I tell my parents about you? What excuses can I make that will convince them that my friendship with the king's champion?
She used the common tongue language for the two words, spitting them out like poison.
Is in any way an honorable thing? How can I convince them that your soul isn't rotted?
I didn't realize that I needed parental approval.
You are in a position of power and knowledge, and yet you just obey. You obey and you do not question, and you work only toward one goal. Your freedom.
Selena shook her head and looked away.
You turn from me because you know it's true.
And what is so wrong with wanting my freedom? Haven't I suffered enough to deserve it? So what if the means are unpleasant?
I won't deny that you have suffered, Alentia. But there are thousands more who have also suffered, and suffered more. And they do not sell themselves to the king to get what they too deserve. With each person you kill, I am finding fewer and fewer excuses for remaining your friend.
Selena flung her spoon down on the table and stalked to the fireplace. She wanted to rip down the tapestries and the paintings and smash all the silly little baubles and ornaments she'd bought to decorate her room. Mostly, she just wanted to make Nehemia stop looking at her like that, like she was as bad as the monster who sat on that glass throne. She took a breath, then another, listening for signs of anyone else in her chambers, then turned.
I haven't killed anyone, she said softly.
Nehemia went still.
What? I haven't killed anyone.
She remained where she was standing, needing the distance between them to get the words out right.
I faked all of their deaths and helped them flee.
Nehemia ran her hands over her face, smearing the powdered gold she'd dusted on her eyelids. After a moment, she lowered her fingers. Her dark, lovely eyes were wide.
You haven't killed a single person he's ordered you to kill?
Not a single one.
What about Archer Finn?
I offered Archer a bargain. I give him until the end of the month to get his affairs in order before he fakes his death and flees, and he gives me information about the actual enemies of the king. She could tell Nehemia the rest of it later, the king's plans, the library catacombs, but mentioning those things now would only bring up too many questions. Nehemia took a sip of her tea, the liquid inside the cup sloshing as her hands shook.
He'll kill you if he finds out.
Selena looked to the balcony doors, where a beautiful day was dawning in the wide-open world beyond.
I know. And this information that Archer is giving you, what will you do with it?
What sort of information is it?
Selena briefly explained what he'd told her about the people involved in putting Terrasen's lost heir back on the throne, even telling her what had happened with Davis. Nehemia's face paled. When Selena finished, Nehemia took another trembling sip of tea.
And you trust Archer?
I think he values his life more than he values anything else.
He's a courtesan. How can you be sure you can trust him?
Selena slipped back into her chair, Fleetfoot curling between her feet.
Well, you trust me and I'm an assassin.
It's not the same.
Selena looked to the tapestry along the wall to her left and the chest of drawers in front of it. While I'm telling you all the things that could get me executed, there's something else that I should bring up. Nehemia followed her line of sight to the tapestry. After a moment, she let out a gasp.
Is that? That's Elena in the tapestry, isn't it?
Selena smiled crookedly and crossed her arms.
That's not even the worst of it.
As they walked down to the tomb, Selena told Nehemia about everything that had occurred between her and Elena since Samhain, and all the adventures that had befallen her. She showed her the room where Cain had summoned the Ritterak, and as they approached the tomb, Selena winced as she remembered one miserable new detail.
Brought a friend?
Nehemia yelped. Selena greeted the bronze skull-shaped door knocker.
Hello, Mort.
Nehemia squinted at the skull.
How is this? She looked over her shoulder at Selena. How is this possible?
Ancient spells and nonsense, Selena said, cutting off Mort as he began to recite the story of how King Brannan created him. Someone used a spell with the word marks.
Someone, Mort sputtered. That someone is...
Shut it, Selena said, and flung open the tomb door, letting Nehemia inside. Save it for someone who cares.
Mort huffed what sounded like a violent stream of curses, and Nehemia's eyes twinkled as they entered the tomb.
It's incredible, the princess whispered, gazing at the walls where the word marks had been written.
What does it say?
Death, eternity, rulers, Nehemia recited, standard tomb posturing.
She continued moving through the room. As Nehemia strode about, Selena leaned against a wall and slumped to the ground. Sighing, she rubbed her heel against one of the raised stars on the floor, examining the curve that they made across the room.
Do they make a constellation?
Selena rose to her feet and stared down. 9 of the stars made up a familiar pattern, the dragonfly. Her brows rose. She'd never realized it before. A few feet away, another constellation lay on the floor, the wyvern. It sat at the head of Gavin's sarcophagus.
A symbol of Otterlin's house, as well as the second constellation in the sky.
Selena followed the line that the shapes made, weaving through the tomb. The night sky passed beneath her feet, and by the time she reached the final constellation, she would have collided with the wall had Nehemia not grabbed her by the arm.
What is it?
Selena was staring down at the last constellation, the Stag, Lord of the North, the symbol of Terrasen, Elena's home country. The constellation faced the wall, and its head seemed to be pointed upward, as though it were looking at something. Selena followed the Stag's stare, up through the dozens of word marks that covered the wall until...
By the word? Look at this, she said, pointing.
An eye, no larger than her palm, was etched into the wall. A hole was bored in its center, a perfectly crafted puncture that had been carefully concealed within the eye. The word mark itself made a face, and while the other eye was filled in and smooth, this one held a hollowed-out iris.
It is only with the eye that one can see rightly.
There was no way she was that lucky. It was surely no more than coincidence. Calming her growing excitement, she lifted onto her toes to see into the eye.
How had she not noticed this before?
She took a step back, and the word mark faded into the wall. She stepped back onto the constellation, and it appeared again.
You can only see the face when you stand on the Stag,
Nehemia whispered. Selena ran her hands over the face, feeling for any cracks or slight breezes that might suggest a door into another room.
Nothing.
With a deep breath, she rose onto her toes and faced the eye, her dagger held aloft in case anything leapt out at her. Nehemia chuckled softly, and Selena conceded a smile as she put her eye against the stone and peered into the gloom. There was nothing. Just a distant wall, illuminated by a small shaft of moonlight.
It's just a blank wall. Does that make any sort of sense?
She'd been jumping to conclusions, trying to see things and make connections that weren't there. Selena stepped away so Nehemia could see for herself.
Mort, she hollered while the princess looked. What the hell is that wall? Does it make any sense to you why it would be here?
No, Mort said dully.
Don't lie to me.
Lie to you?
To you? Oh, I couldn't lie to you. You asked me whether it makes sense, and I said no.
You must learn to ask the right questions before you can receive the right answers.
Selena growled.
What sort of question might I ask to receive the right answer?
Mort clicked his tongue.
I'll have none of that. Come back when you have some proper questions.
You promise you'll tell me then?
I'm a door knocker. It's not in my nature to make promises.
Nehemia stepped away from the wall and rolled her eyes.
Don't listen to his teasing. I can't see anything either. Perhaps it is just a prank. Old castles are full of nonsense, intended only to confuse and bother later generations. But all these word marks...
Selena took a too short breath
and then made the request that she'd been contemplating for some time now.
Could you teach me how to read them?
Oh-ho, cackled Mort from the wall. Are you sure you're not too dim to understand? Selena ignored him. She hadn't told Nehemia about Elena's latest demand to uncover the king's source of power, because she knew what Nehemia's response would be. Listen to the dead queen. But the word mark seemed so connected to everything, somehow. Even to that eye riddle and this stupid trick wall. And perhaps if she learned how to use them, then she could unlock the iron door in the library and find some answers beyond it.
Maybe just the basics?
Nehemia smiled. The basics are the hardest part. Usefulness aside, it was a forgotten secret language, a system for accessing a strange power. Who wouldn't want to learn about it?
Morning lessons instead of our walk, then?
Nehemia beamed, and Selena felt a twinge of guilt for not telling her about the catacombs, as the princess said, "Of course." When they left, Nehemia spent a few minutes studying Mort, mostly asking him questions about his creation spell, which he claimed to have forgotten, then claimed was too private, then claimed she had no business hearing. After Nehemia's near-infinite patience wore thin, they cursed Mort soundly and stormed back upstairs, where Fleetfoot was anxiously waiting in the bedroom. The dog refused to set foot in the secret passage, probably because of some foul stench left over from Cain and his creature. Even Nehemia hadn't been able to coax her downstairs with them. Once the door was closed and hidden, Selena leaned against her desk. The eye in the tomb hadn't been the solution to the riddle. Now she wondered if Nehemia might have a better sense of what it was about.
"I found a book on word marks in Davis's office," she told Nehemia. "I can't tell if it's a riddle or a proverb, but someone wrote this on the inside back cover. It is only with the eye that one can see rightly."
Nehemia frowned. "Sounds like an idle lord's nonsense to me.
But do you think it's just coincidence that he was a part of this movement against the king and had a book on word marks? What if this is some sort of riddle about them?"
Nehemia snorted. "What if Davis wasn't even in this group? Perhaps Archer had his information wrong. I bet that book had been there for years, and I bet Davis didn't even know it existed. Or maybe he saw it in a bookshop and bought it to look daring. But maybe he didn't. And maybe Archer was onto something." She would question him when she saw him next. Selena fiddled with the chain of her amulet, then went rod straight. The eye.
"Do you think it could be this eye?"
"No," Nehemia said. "It wouldn't be that easy."
"But..."
Selena pushed off the desk. "Trust me," Nehemia said. "It's a coincidence, just like that eye in the wall. The eye could refer to anything, anything at all. Having eyes plastered all over things used to be quite popular centuries ago, as a ward against evil. You'll drive yourself mad, Alentia. I can do some research on the subject, but it might take a while before I find anything." Selena's face warmed. Fine. Maybe she was wrong. She didn't want to believe Nehemia, didn't want to think that the riddle could be that impossible to solve, but the princess knew far more about ancient lore than she did. So Selena sat down at her breakfast table again. Her porridge had gone cold, but she ate it anyway.
"Thank you,"
she said in between mouthfuls as Nehemia sat down again too, "for not exploding on me." Nehemia laughed. "Alentia, I'm honestly surprised you told me." An opening and closing door, then footsteps, then Philippa knocked and bustled in, carrying a letter for Selena.
"Good morning, beautiful ladies,"
she clucked, making Nehemia grin.
"A letter for our most esteemed champion."
Selena beamed at Philippa and took it, and her smile grew as she read the contents once the servant left.
"It's from Archer,"
she told Nehemia.
"He's given me some names of people who might be involved in this movement, people associated with Davis."
She was a little shocked he'd risked putting it all in a letter. Perhaps she needed to teach him a thing or two about code writing. Nehemia had stopped smiling, though. What sort of man just hands out information like it's nothing more than morning gossip?
"A man who wants his freedom and has had enough of serving pigs."
Selena folded the letter and stood. If the men on this list were anything like Davis, then perhaps handing them over to the king and using them as leverage wouldn't be so horrible after all.
I should get dressed. I need to go into the city.
She was halfway to her dressing room when she turned.
We'll have our first lesson over breakfast tomorrow?
Nehemia nodded, digging into her food again. It took her all day to hunt down the men, to learn where they lived, whom they spoke to, how well guarded they were. None of it yielded anything useful. She was tired and cranky and hungry when she trudged back to the castle at sundown, and her mood only took a turn for the worse when she arrived at her rooms and found a note from Kaol. The king had commanded her to be on guard duty yet again for the royal ball that night.
Chapter 17.
Kaol knew Selena was in a foul mood without even having to speak to her. Actually, he hadn't dared speak to her since before the ball had started, other than to position her outside the patio, hidden in the shadows of a pillar. A few hours in the winter night would cool her down. From his spot inside, tucked into an alcove near the servants' entrance, he could keep an eye on the glittering ball in front of him, as well as the assassin standing watch just outside the towering balcony doors. Not that he didn't trust her, but having Selena in one of these moods always set him on edge, too. She was currently leaning against the pillar, arms crossed, not hiding in the shadows as he'd told her to. He could see the tendrils of her breath curling in the night air, and the moonlight glinting off the hilt of one of the daggers she wore at her side. The ballroom had been decorated in hues of white and glacier blue, with swaths of silk floating from the ceiling and ornate glass baubles hanging between. It was something out of a winter dream, and it was in honor of Holland, of all people. A few hours of entertainment and a small fortune spent for a boy who was currently sulking on his little glass throne, shoveling sweets down his throat as his mother smiled at him. He'd never tell Dorian, but Kaol dreaded the day when Holland would grow into a man. A spoiled child was easy enough to deal with, but a spoiled, cruel leader would be another matter entirely. He hoped that between him and Dorian, they could check whatever corruption was already rotting away in Holland's heart, once Dorian ascended to the throne. The heir was on the dance floor, fulfilling his obligation to court and crown by dancing with whatever ladies demanded his attention, which, not surprisingly, was almost all of them. Dorian played his role well and smiled throughout the waltzes, a graceful and competent partner, never one complaining or turning any lady away. The dance finished, Dorian bowed to his partner, and before he could take one step, another courtier was curtsying in front of him. If Kaol had been in Dorian's shoes, he would have winced, but the prince just grinned, took the lady's hand, and swept her around the floor. Kaol glanced outside again and straightened. Selena wasn't by the pillar. He stifled a snarl. Tomorrow they were going to have a nice long chat about the rules and the consequences of abandoning posts while on guard duty. A rule that he was also breaking, he realized, as he slipped from the alcove and out the door that had been left ajar to allow fresh air into the toasty ballroom. Where in hell had she gone? Perhaps she'd actually seen some sign of trouble. Not that there'd ever been an attack on the palace, and not that anyone would ever be foolish enough to try during a royal ball. But he still put a hand on the hilt of his sword as he approached the columns at the top of the stairs, leading down into the frosted garden. She'd been standing right here, and Kaol spotted her. Well, she'd certainly abandoned her post, but not to face some potential threat. Kaol crossed his arms. Selena had left her post to dance. The music was loud enough that it reached them out here, and at the foot of the steps, Selena waltzed with herself. She even held the edge of her dark cloak in one hand as if it were the skirts of a ball gown, her other hand poised on the arm of an invisible partner. He didn't know if he should laugh, yell, or just go back inside and pretend he'd never seen it. She turned, an elegant sweeping motion that brought her to face him, and halted. Well, the last option was no longer a possibility. Laughter or yelling, then. Though neither felt appropriate now. Even in the moonlight, he could see her scowl. I'm bored to tears and nearly dead with cold.
she said, dropping her cloak. He remained atop the stairs, watching her.
And it's your fault, she went on, stuffing her hands into her pockets. You made me come out here, and someone left the balcony door open so I could hear all that lovely music. The waltz was still playing, filling the frozen air around them with sound. So you should really reconsider who's to blame. It was like putting a starving man in front of a feast and telling him not to eat. Which, by the way, you actually did when you made me go to that state dinner.
She was babbling, and her face was dark enough for him to know she was beyond mortified that he'd caught her. He bit his lip to keep from smiling, and walked down the four steps to the gravel path of the garden.
You're the greatest assassin in Aurelia, and yet you can't stand watch for a few hours?
What's there to watch? She hissed. Couples sneaking out to fondle each other between the hedges? Or His Royal Highness dancing with every eligible maiden?
You're jealous?
She barked a laugh.
No, gods no. But I can't say it's particularly fun to watch him, or watch any of them enjoying themselves. I think I'm more jealous of that giant buffet no one is even touching.
He chuckled and glanced up the stairs, to the patio and the ballroom doors beyond. He should be back inside already. But here he was, towing that line he couldn't stay away from. He'd managed to stay on this side of it last night, even though seeing her cry during Rena Goldsmith's song had stirred him so bone deep it was like he'd found a part of him he hadn't even realized was missing. He'd made them run an extra mile this morning, not to punish her for it, but because he couldn't stop thinking about the way she'd looked at him. She sighed loudly and studied the moon. It was so bright it drowned out the stars.
I heard the music and I just wanted to dance for a few minutes. To just forget everything for one waltz and pretend to be a normal girl.
So, she glared at him now, go ahead and snarl and snap at me about it.
What will my punishment be? 3 extra miles tomorrow? An hour of drills? The rack?
There was a sort of bleak bitterness in her words that didn't sit well with him. And yes, they would have a conversation about abandoning posts. But right now, Kaol stepped up to the line.
Dance with me, he said, and held out his hand to her.
Selena stared at Kaol's outstretched hand.
What?
The moonlight caught in his golden eyes, setting them shining.
What didn't you understand?
Nothing. Everything. Because when he'd said it, it hadn't been the way Dorian had asked her to dance at the Yulmus Ball. That had merely been an invitation. But this... His hand remained reaching toward her.
As far as I recall, she said, lifting her chin, at Yulmus I asked you to dance and you flat out refused me. You said it was too dangerous for us to be seen dancing together.
Things are different now.
Again, another layered statement she couldn't begin to sort through now. Her throat tightened, and she looked at his extended hand, flecked with calluses and scars.
Dance with me, Selena,
he said again, his voice rough. When her eyes found his, she forgot about the cold, and the moon, and the glass palace looming above them. The secret library and the king's plans and Mort and Elena faded into nothing. She took his hand, and there was only the music and Kaol. His fingers were warm even through his gloves. He slid his other hand around her waist as she braced one of hers on his arm. She looked up at him when he began to move. A slow step, then another, and another, easing into the steady rhythm of the waltz. He stared back at her, neither of them smiling, somehow beyond smiling at that moment. The waltz built, louder, faster, and Kaol steered her into it, never stumbling. Her breathing turned uneven, but she couldn't look away from him, couldn't stop dancing. The moonlight and the garden and the golden glow from the ballroom blurred together, now miles away.
We'll never be a normal boy and girl, will we?
She managed to say.
No,
he breathed, eyes blazing.
We won't.
And then the music exploded around them,
and Kaol took her with it, spinning her so that her cloak fanned out around her. Each step was flawless, lethal, like that first time they'd sparred together so many months ago. She knew his every move, and he knew hers, as though they'd been dancing this waltz together all their lives. Faster, never faltering, never breaking her stare. The rest of the world quieted into nothing. In that moment, after 10 long years, Selena looked at Kaol and realized she was home. Dorian Havilliard stood at the ballroom window, watching Selena and Kaol dance in the garden beyond, their dark cloaks flowing around them like they were no more than 2 wraiths spinning through the wind. After hours of dancing, he'd finally managed to get free of the ladies demanding his attention, and had come to the window to get some much-needed fresh air. He'd intended to go outside, but then he'd seen them. That had been enough to still his steps, but not enough to make him walk away. He knew he should. He should walk away and pretend he hadn't seen it, because even though it was just a dance, someone stepped beside him, and he glanced over in time to see Nehemia stop at the window. After months of being scarce around the court due to the rebel massacre in Eelway, she'd made an appearance tonight. She was resplendent in a cobalt gown with gold thread accents, her hair coiled and braided in a coronet atop her head. Her delicate golden earrings glittered in the light of the chandelier, drawing his eye to her elegant neck. Nehemia was easily the most stunning woman in the ballroom, and he hadn't failed to notice how many men, and women, had been watching her all night. "Don't cause trouble for them," she said quietly, her accent still thick, but much improved since she'd arrived in Rifthold. Dorian raised an eyebrow. Nehemia traced an invisible pattern on the glass pane. "You and I, we will always stand apart. We will always have..." She searched for the word. "Responsibilities. We will always have burdens that no one else can ever understand, that they..." She inclined her head toward Kaol and Selena. "Will never understand. And if they did, then they would not want them." "They would not want us, is what you mean." Kaol spun Selena, and she flowed smoothly through the air before snapping back into his arms. "I've already decided to move on," Dorian said with equal quiet. It was the truth. He'd awoken this morning feeling lighter than he had in weeks. Nehemia nodded, the gold and jewels in her hair twinkling. "Then I thank you for that." She traced another symbol on the window. "Your cousin, Roland, told me that your father has approved Councilman Mullison's plans to swell Calicala's ranks, to expand the labor camp to accommodate more... people." He kept his face blank. There were far too many eyes on them. "Roland told you that?" Nehemia lowered her hand from the window. "He wants me to tell my father that I support his agenda, to get my father to make the expansion as easy as possible. I refused. He says there's a council meeting tomorrow where they will vote on Mollison's plans. I'm not allowed to attend." Dorian focused on his breathing. "Roland had no right to do that, any of it." "Would you stop it, then?" Her dark eyes were fixed on his face. "Speak to your father at the council meeting. Convince the others to say no." No one except for Selena dared speak to him like that. But her boldness had nothing to do with his response, as Dorian said. "I can't." His face warmed as the words came out. But it was true. He couldn't tackle Calicala, not without causing a lot of trouble for both himself and Nehemia. He'd already convinced his father to leave Nehemia alone. Demanding he shut down Calicala could force him to choose sides and make a choice that could destroy everything he had. "You can't or you will not." Dorian sighed, but she cut him off. "If Selena were shipped to Calicala, would you free her? Would you put a stop to the camp? When you took her from Endovir, did you think twice about the thousands you left behind?" He had, but not for as long as he should have. "Innocents work and die in Calicala and Endovir. By the thousands. Ask Selena about the graves they dig there, Prince. Look at the scars on her back. and realized that what she went through is a blessing compared to what most endure. Perhaps he'd just gotten used to her accent, but he could have sworn she was speaking more clearly. Nehemia pointed at the garden, at Selena and Kaol, who had stopped dancing and were talking now. If she was sent back, would you free her?
Of course I would, he said carefully. But it's complicated.
There is nothing complicated. It is the difference between right and wrong. The slaves in those camps have people who love them just as much as you loved my friend.
He glanced around them. Ladies were eagerly watching from behind their fans, and even his mother had noticed their lengthy conversation. Outside, Selena had resumed her post by the pillar. At the other end of the room, Kaol slipped through one of the patio doors and took up his spot in an alcove, his face blank, as if the dance had never happened.
This isn't the place for this conversation.
Nehemia stared at him for a long moment before nodding.
You have power in you, Prince. More power than you realize.
She touched his chest, tracing a symbol there, too, and some of the court ladies gasped. But Nehemia's eyes were locked on his.
It sleeps, she whispered, tapping his heart. In here. When the time comes, when it awakens, do not be afraid.
She removed her hand and gave him a sad smile.
When it is time, I will help you.
With that, she walked away, the courtiers parting, then swallowing up her wake. He stared after the princess, wondering what her last words had meant, and why, when she had said them, something ancient and slumbering deep inside of him had opened an eye. Chapter 18 Selena sat in the parlor of Archer's townhouse, frowning at the crackling fireplace. She hadn't touched the tea the butcher had laid out for her on the low-lying marble table, though she'd certainly indulged in 2 cream puffs and 1 chocolate torte while waiting for Archer to return. She could have come back later, but it was freezing outside, and after standing on guard duty last night, she was exhausted, and in need of anything to distract her from reliving that dance with Kaol. After the waltz had finished, he'd merely told her that if she abandoned her post again, he'd break a hole through the ice in the trout pond and toss her in. And then, as though he hadn't just danced with her in a way that made her knees tremble, he stalked back inside and left her to suffer in the cold. He hadn't even mentioned the dance this morning during their run. Maybe she'd just imagined the whole thing. Maybe the frigid night air had made her stupid. She'd been distracted during her first word marks lesson with Nehemia that morning and had earned a fair amount of scolding as a result. She blamed the complex, near-nonsensical language. She'd learned a few languages before, enough to get by in places where Otterland's language laws hadn't taken root. But word marks were completely different. Trying to learn them while also trying to unravel the labyrinth that was Kaol Westfall was impossible. Selena heard the front door open. Muffled words, hurried footsteps, and then Archer's beautiful face popped in. Just give me a moment to freshen up. She stood. That won't be necessary. This won't take long. Archer's green eyes glimmered, but he slipped into the parlor, shutting the mahogany door behind him. Sit, she told him, not particularly caring that this was his house. Archer obeyed, taking a seat in the armchair across from the couch. His face was flushed from the cold, making his lovely eyes seem even greener. She crossed her legs. If your butler doesn't stop listening at the keyhole, I'm going to cut off his ears and shove them down his throat. There was a muffled cough, followed by retreating footsteps. Once she was sure no one else was listening, she leaned back into the couch cushions. I need more than a list of names. I need to know what exactly they're planning, and how much they know about the king. Archer's face paled.
I need more time, Selena.
You have little more than 3 weeks left.
Give me 5.
The king only gave me a month to kill you. I already have a hard time convincing everyone you're a difficult target. I can't give you more time.
But I need it to wrap up things here in Rifthold, and to get you more information. With Davis dead, they're all being extra careful. No one is talking.
No one dares whisper anything. Do they know Davis was a mistake?
Mistakes happen often enough in Rifthold for us to know that